Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey. Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat cold tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500. Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit arrcled.com.
Today's cool fact of the day is that some long-distance runners have their toenails permanently removed because of chronic bleeding and pain. The way they do it is they anesthetize the toe, remove the nail, and then they pour carbonic acid over the nail bed to prevent the toenail from growing back. So if you wanted to get this done and you lived in Nova Scotia, you could kill two birds with one stone by donating your toenails to a cancer research center, which is the Guinness World Record holder for having the largest collection of toenails. They've got about 250,000. They're doing a crazy study looking for data on why Nova Scotia has the highest rate of cancer in Canada. And they're thinking maybe it's arsenic in the drinking water, and toenails can tell you how much arsenic you were exposed to in the last 6 to 9 months. So, hey, if you're a long distance runner and you don't like your toenails, there's a place for you to vacation.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy, specifically more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Now, let's see. Also, as we're going here, I got to just tell you, today's guest is Joe DeSena. And this guy is an extreme endurance racer, a radical limit crusher. He made his fortune on Wall Street, packed up, and went off to sunny Vermont. And since then, he's competed in over 50 ultra events, including 12 Ironman events in just a year. And he created the Death Race in 2005. And a couple years ago, he started doing Spartan races. These are multiple-day physical and psychological challenge races, really to push people to the ultimate limits of performance. So this is an amazing guest to have on Bulletproof Executive Radio because, I mean, this is a guy who's about as superhuman as it gets. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Now my head is so big, I won't be able to get back in my house.
Well, if that happens, just run 100 miles or something, you'll be fine.
There you go. Or rip my toenails off.
There you go. Have you done it yet?
I've lost a bunch of toenails running, but I'd seem kind of weird for the people I did meet along the way that were taking them off permanently.
Yeah, plus it would just look weird if you were barefoot. I don't know. It doesn't seem that attractive.
Yeah, I agree.
Then again, big black toenails falling off. I've had that problem doing some high altitude mountaineering. I've got these giant size 16 feet. So when I buy the largest pair of mountaineering boots on the planet, I kind of fit. And I've even like heat stretched them, and I've custom made crampons and all. And it's, yeah, just losing toenails sucks. I agree with you there.
That is a large foot.
Literally, when I bought the crampons, they laughed at me, and I had to get like steel from Germany, and they had to laser cut it. Otherwise, if your crampons fail, you die, right? So I had to do that. It was like the first $800 pair of crampons ever known to man, I think. But oh well.
Wow.
Now, what got you into all this crazy stuff, man? You know, you were one of those banker guys from New York, and then all of a sudden, now you're like, you know, killing it out there on these ultra endurance events. What caused this change?
So, crazy story. So back, 13 years old, even before that, I started a business. The business back then was a swimming pool cleaning business. I grew up in Howard Beach, Queens, and, it was organized crime capital of the world. My neighbor was the head of a banana organized crime family. I didn't know it at the time. I just knew he was really nice to me. And, he took me in under his wing, and he had me clean his pool for $35 an hour. And then he gave me the head of the other families, five families, pools to clean. And then that grew pretty large. Before you know it, I had 750 accounts, most of them in organized crime. And and so over a 10, 15-year period, I ended up building this really large swimming pool business, which became a construction business. And it was extremely physically intense. And the reason for that was in May, April, when the season would open, everybody had a son named Johnny or Jimmy or something that had a birthday party coming up, and the pool had to be clean, and the backyard had to be done, and the brickwork had to be done. So you can imagine having 700 customers that all owned weapons, and if they weren't in jail, right, they needed the pool done immediately. And so I was working my butt off physically. And mentally. I mean, owning a business is very difficult, as anybody listening that owns a business. And so then from there, I was lucky. I ended up on Wall Street thanks to one of those customers, got me my first job. They saw how hard I worked and thought I would do better on Wall Street, and it was a great move. But then I became sedentary. I started sitting at a desk, making money, didn't have to work as hard as I had with the construction and the swimming pools. And then I was lucky. I was in a stairwell in a building in Manhattan, and I was running up the stairs, and I ran into a good, really good-looking guy who happened to be on the cover of Men's Health, and he was running stairs as well, and he started telling me about these things called adventure races, and this was like probably midnight, 97-ish, 96, 97, and I'm a glutton for punishment, got excited, and started signing up for these things. Before you knew it, I was doing the Iditarod by foot, you know, in January, 30 below weather. And I just couldn't get enough of it. It was a way for me to escape Wall Street and all the headaches associated with it and the crazy people. And so every time I would do a race, Nova Scotia, Alaska, Switzerland, you name it, I thought, could I live here? I need to be here because this feels really good wherever here was with nature. And ultimately ended up in Vermont. Although a close second was Charlevoix, northern Quebec, which was awesome, but really tough to get to and pretty desolate, and probably never see my family if I went there. And so Vermont became the choice, and so here we are. We're in Vermont.
Wow. Similar story here. I live up on Vancouver Island. I wanted to be around trees and, you know, nature and still do what I do. But you know, I don't want to live in a big city. I've done that in Silicon Valley for long enough that I feel like my family will be happier. My kids will be happier. Like, it's just a better deal to be in a place like that.
Yeah, so
I got to ask you, did you ever find a body part in a pool filter? Because I'm still just thinking about that.
Well, there were just a couple of times where I was asked to put a couple of things under the swimming pools as I was building them, but we won't talk about that here.
You have to have been asked that before.
I've got some crazy stories that we could talk about offline.
That's probably the right place to talk about it, right? You said something that it was actually the reason I wanted to invite you on the show, just when it just caught my eye. And you said the Spartan race was intended to wake up the world and save humanity, which is kind of a big claim for a Spartan race. What do we need saving from?
So, and you probably talk about it on many of your previous podcasts, but my big thing is we've been on the planet, let's call it a million years, just for round numbers. It's only the last 200, 250 maybe, that we live the way we live, climate-controlled houses, coffee on demand. We're basically living in bubble wrap.
Yeah.
Some of us, not the whole world. And so what was interesting to me, the reason that's relevant, is as I was building these businesses, especially the construction and swimming pool business, is it intrigued me that foreigners would outwork any American I could hire. If I was a maniac. I want to work 20 hours a day. And very few people could keep up with me, but the foreigners could outwork me. And that just for 12 years fascinated me. And I finally came to realize it's a frame of reference issue, right? These guys and girls from these countries that don't live in that bubble wrap life, that don't have food as readily as we do, that have maybe in some cases, I mean, you look at Bosnia, they burn the wood in their roof to heat the house until they have no roof. And so so that just intrigued me. These were tough, gritty people that were just happy all the time to be alive, have water and food and a job. And so Spartan Race is a minor attempt to get us, the bubble wrap society, to get a taste of what that feels like. Get out of our comfort zone, get in the mud, act like a human, face some obstacles, and maybe hopefully change our frame of reference.
I really resonate with that. One of the most, probably one of the most amazing top 10 things I've seen was when I went to Cambodia about 10 years ago. And a whole society has just been ravaged by Khmer Rouge, and you know, people seeing their parents killed. You know, just the most traumatic things I can imagine. If you're lucky, you make a dollar a day. Everyone's impoverished. These people are walking around singing songs, smiling and happy and genuinely, on average, kinder, nicer, and happier than someone you see on the streets in New York. And I just didn't even know that was possible when I saw this. And I've asked myself ever since, like, what was the difference? And it sounds like you've kind of sort of saying, let's push some limits to the point where you see that whatever you have is so much more than it could be. Is that kind of the idea here? Just hit that wall?
We got the book coming out, which I'm sure we'll touch on, Spartan Up, and the whole concept of the book, because people, as you just asked, I don't understand how Spartan Race is supposed to change people. The book explains the concept. One of them is that frame of reference, that we just need to be ripped out of our comfort zone. I tell my kids all the time, when my kids are done with their wrestling practice at night, they walk into the kitchen, and if there's salad on the plate, which is 9 out of 10 days, there's salad on the plate, the first thing they're going to eat, they hit the ground and are miserable. And they walk over to salad, and I say the same thing every night. Tomorrow we're having rocks. We're going to heat up rocks. You're going to eat rocks. They're going to break your teeth, and they're going to ruin your stomach. And the point is, like, we don't know how good we have it.
Yeah. I was in a sweat lodge once a while back, a traditional Indian thing, and there was a woman in there who was like, "Oh, I've hit rock bottom, and I just have to survive." And I don't know what kind of came over me, but I just looked at her, and I'm like, "I noticed you still have both of your legs." And like, she was nowhere near rock bottom, but like, you know, people just don't see where it is. They're just not able to do it. So,
you ever see that honey badger video on the internet?
Exactly.
I mean, he doesn't care, right? He's getting stung by bees. He's attacking king cobras. Right. He gets bit by venom. And so when I'm having a bad day, and like that woman that you just described in the sweat, I think to myself, it's not as bad as the honey badger. I mean, he's getting bit by a
snake. So what's the deal with the honey badger?
So the honey badger, right, he doesn't care. I probably can't curse on this podcast, but
trying to a really funny video. Sort of have to tag it.
Yeah, exactly. But the honey badger is just a bad ass.
Yeah.
And he just gets it done no matter what gets in his way. Mm-hmm. And so I say to my kids, me and Andy, who started Death Race together, joke to ourselves whenever we're having a tough time. Well, you know, Lewis and Clark had it pretty tough. Just, you know, three generations ago, like I said to somebody recently who said they had a friend who had cancer and it was so terrible, and certainly it was bad. I don't want to take anything away from anybody with cancer, but like in the old days, you get on your horse, you got the buggy with the family behind you, you try to make it from New York to California because you want to like change everybody's life. Grandma dies along the way. Your wife gives birth. Maybe a lion attacks the family. And no one pats you on the back when you get to California and says, oh my God, you had such a rough ride. It's just, that was a normal like trip.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. When you read some of those historical accounts, you're like, man, like everyone today is a wuss, right? Like every single one is, oh, my Facebook is down. But all right. So now I'm going to probably piss a few people off, but years ago, someone close to me was doing one of the, you know, race to raise money for a disease of some sort. So they ended up having a bunch of mostly overweight and still overweight at the end of the event kind of thing, where a bunch of people who were probably more healthy than they were before they started, but kind of didn't really push themselves that hard, but, you know, ostensibly raise some money for cancer or whatnot. So I see a lot of these kind of events used for fundraising where I know there's great community value and I support fundraising for medical research, but also I kind of question whether it was like, I did it to say I did it or I did it versus like, I got every ounce of energy out of me. Like I pushed myself to a limit. How do you differentiate between the, I don't know, that style of event where we're all sort of just kind of loping through it to say we did it versus like, I'm killing myself here?
No, I just had this conversation today with somebody. There's no accomplishment if it's not hard. It doesn't count. And so people say, especially our board of directors and our investors with Spartan Race, like, can't we tone it down a little, Joe? Can't we, you know? And I say, well, we're like the color run in many ways. We just believe in black, blue, and blood. It's just a little different. Because otherwise the medal doesn't mean anything. And that medal is so significant and life-changing only if it's hard. It's got to be hard.
Yep. So that the hard is what makes it there. And really, if you want your brain to change, your brain doesn't change for easy. It never has. The only thing that makes it change is when it's too painful to not change. And that's a biological rule for the most part. You can motivate yourself with positive reinforcement, but you know the tiger chasing you is a bigger motivation than the hamburger at the end of the run. And if you combine them, it probably works well. So I agree with you on the value of that. But isn't there also like a level where you can push yourself too hard, you just get sick? Like how many people finish a Spartan race and then, you know, they have the flu and a cold for a month and they feel like crap?
It's funny. It's funny. We put on, separate from Spartan race, we have Spartan's evil twin sister in Vermont here. We put on a few races and one of them's 100-mile snowshoe. And I had one of the guys who works for Spartan come up here to attempt that race 3 years ago. And it was a snowstorm and it was brutal and he was about 60 miles in and his girlfriend was here and he said, I'm done. I can't take another step. I said, what do you mean you're done? She jumped in front of me. She said, he's done. He's sick. He's not feeling well. And I said, well, is he pissing blood? I said, no. I said, well, if he's not pissing blood, he can still go. When he starts pissing blood, let me know, but he'll get through it. And sure enough, he finished it. But yeah, I mean, there's a level and you don't want kidney failure.
Yeah.
The body can go pretty far, a lot further than you think.
A lot of the bulletproof techniques that are really profoundly effective, you know, high intensity interval training, sprint till you puke, right? That's basically a short description of that. Even things like the sleep induction mat, you lay on a bed of longer than normal sharp spikes, right? And your body's like, holy crap, that really hurts. And you're like, shut up and lay there. And it's that shut up and lay there that when the body finally gives up, that's when the endorphins come. That's when the relaxation happens. And it's funny that basically laying on a bed of nails helps you sleep deeper later. But anything that tells the body like, no, I'm in charge and you're going to do what I damn well told you. When you do it enough times, it seems like you become master of yourself more. And when I look at Spartan races and death races, kind of the concept of self-mastery comes out of those. Is that Is that what you mean by, you know, keeping yourself from being asleep?
Yeah, I've had some of my best night's sleep on like a bed of rocks and boulders and thought to myself, this is so damn comfortable. And I used to think that I haven't pushed myself hard enough until I can lay on some really sharp rocks and it feels good. So I agree. I think taking yourself to that level where your muscles finally relax and give up, and where you get to a place where I used to say, where you just want water, food, and shelter. That's a really nice place to be, right? All the other stuff that we live with and all these headaches and all these pressures are irrelevant when you get back to water, food, and shelter.
So are you a masochist or a sadist?
No, I mean, I'm a little bit of both. It depends. If I'm putting on, you know, the death race, this is going to sound terrible. I like to hurt people, but I like to hurt them in order to help them. I don't like to become friends with them, because if I'm friends with them, it's hard then to torture them. But there's something really good that comes out of what I do to these people. And, you know, it might take them 2 or 3 years before they apologize for all the bad things they say about me or to me. But when they finally come around, I had the U.S. Olympic wrestling team come up here and train with me, and they hated me. These guys, when they got off the plane in, this is funny, this is in the book, so I'm giving it away, but when they got off the plane in Rutland, Vermont, which is, let's say, 18 miles from here, a car went and picked them up, and they were in khakis. You know, wrestlers are pretty professional people. They had loafers on and suitcases with little wheels and handles. And about 5 miles in, it occurred to me, why am I picking them up? These are Olympic wrestlers. I called the driver. I said, drop them off. Give them directions. Let them walk here. And they walked 15 miles with their little wheels on their things and khakis and shoes and almost got run over a few times. But it set the stage for what we were going to do that weekend, which was completely turn their lives upside down and show them that, yeah, you're pretty tough on the mat for the 2 or 4 or 5 minutes or whatever it is you're wrestling. But let me show you what 48 hours straight feels like, because it's going to make your time on the mat that much easier. And it took a few years. One of those wrestlers won the world, called me, hadn't talked to me since he left here, didn't really like me, and said, I got to thank you. I won the world, and I attribute it to that weekend.
So there's, in a lot of spiritual practices, there's the idea that, you know, you have to face death. You know, you have to die a spiritual death or an ego death. But a lot of times, going back thousands of years, those practices were, oh, here's a knife and a loincloth and freezing temperature desert. We'll see you in a week, right? Kind of a similar general principle there. I mean, do people have, you know, do they have kind of a spiritual experience when they hit that wall and they realize that there's a wall and I can go over it?
I mean, I had it. I've had, you know, 50 of them. And when you throw in some hallucinations in there, it's really, really spiritual. One year we had the death race up here. We had a start and end in the church.
And that's cool.
Awesome. Talk about spiritual experience. Awesome. We had the priests involved. And we lost one of the racers. And we're in the middle of this ceremony.
Lost as in the racer died, right?
No, he didn't die. He's on the mountain. We're in the church. The storm going on outside is biblical. And he had taken off his boots, and he was literally found talking to a rock. He was having a full-blown conversation with a large rock. And later we got him into the church, but biblical experience and spiritual experience. So it happens, and I can't tell you how many thanks we get. Tens of thousands of things. You changed my life.
So just seeing what you're made of is worth it.
Oh, without a doubt. And I have to be that terrible person to get people to go to that level, because people don't want to go to that. They don't want to push themselves to that level.
One of the things that I do with a few clients is I have some unusual electrical stimulation devices. And I've done this with, you know, 60-year-old women. I'm like, no, I'm going to turn that up. And you know, they're getting full on muscle stimulation. I'm going to shut up till you swear at me. And they'll sit there and they make these faces and you know, their muscles are tensing. And finally, when you hear, you know, someone who could be my grandmother, you know, dropping F-bombs, I'm like, all right, we hit that level for you. But it's that there's something about our biology, it's not even up here. It's you got to get the meat to hit its limit. And when something like that happens, that's when you get the BDNF, the brain-derived neurotrophic factor. That's when the muscles grow, the nerves grow, but the change up here happens too. So I'm intrigued that you're doing this with these, you know, really extreme things. I mean, do you get kidney failure? Do you get people who like really get screwed up by doing this?
I'm trying to think. We've had some very close calls, particularly with people that aren't the smartest in the bunch, that like might be on Adderall or some pills that they don't tell us about. And so you can't get dehydrated when you're on pills, especially when you mix them. And so we've had situations where we're, you know, 30 miles into the woods with no roads in or out, and you get somebody that collapses. That's the situation. But as far as just pushing yourself, knock on wood, I had dysentery, giardia. I lost 32 pounds in 8 days during a race. I was dead, but you somehow finished a race and you drink some water and you go to a doctor and you come out of it.
So you know what happened to the guy who ran the first marathon, right?
He died.
Why are you doing this?
I just love it.
Now, I don't know if you've read my stuff. I've seen some studies, endurance exercise may, like long-term, like ultra marathon kind of stuff, may increase telomere length, which is a good thing, right? That's an anti-aging thing, one of the fundamental like five theories of aging. So there's some benefits there, but there's a bunch of other ones that look at, you know, joints wearing out, adrenal fatigue, dysfunction, cortisol levels, baldness, testosterone. All of those move in the wrong direction when you do chronic long distance exercise. Yes. Go ahead.
How many studies have you done on like watching TV and sitting on the couch, right? I mean,
I think we have a study. I think it's called Texas. Just there, kidding. There I have friends in Texas. I was just there. Just kidding. But I mean, we know two the opposite, ends, right?
Right. Two ends of the spectrum. And so yeah. I take ultra running over the couch any day and whatever comes along with it. I was in a car accident. I was thrown out the window at 85 miles an hour. My leg ripped out of my hip. They had to break my hip to put it back in. They told me they're going to have to replace my hip. I can't walk again, the whole nine yards. And I don't know. I've done a ton of Ironman since then. I've done a ton of ultras, and everything's working fine. So I don't know. You got to do yoga. If you do some yoga, you'll be fine.
Do you do yoga?
I do yoga. Yeah.
That's too funny. I'm a little out of practice right now. I live kind of far from a yoga thing, but I've done a lot of advanced yoga, and I still do pranayama. So it's interesting. So you bring that in, so you've got some flexibility, some breathing, and I'm not trying to be critical. I don't feel critical of what you're doing. I think it's actually pretty damn amazing what you're doing. I just wonder about like the ultra endurance side of things versus the high intensity sprint side of things. Given the cognitive and life load on me right now, I don't think I have the time for the training and doing the long races. Cause for me, like 15 minutes a week, I'm like, all right, I can sprint or I can lift heavy things. And then maybe I'll get 4 hours of sleep and I'll do it again tomorrow. Well, not the lifting, but I'll just do the same day again. What do you say when, you know, the CEOs and, you know, the non-professional athletes and, you know, Navy SEAL kind of guys, when they come to you and say, I want to do one of these races, but, you know, I'm flying 100 times this year. Like what's your take on that?
What do you mean when they say they're flying?
Well, like literally, these are guys who, like, I work with guys who run like hedge funds and CEOs. I'll be here, I'll be there. I've got jet lag. I've got, you know, 12 hours of meetings today. Then I'm going to exercise for an hour. Then I'm going to get on a plane for 4 hours. Then I'm going to like people live this life.
Yeah, you got to fit it in. I mean, I did it. I was doing the long distance stuff while I was on Wall Street. I was flying literally. I would leave on a Friday or Thursday, go to South Africa, do an Ironman, and be back in work on Monday. And that's a lot of flying time. It sucks, but I don't know. Life, you got to pack it all in. It beats the horse and carriage going cross country and losing the grandpa on the way, right?
It does indeed.
You got to fit it in. So if you're busy and you're an executive and you're spending a ton of time on airplanes, do burpees. I'll go in the back of the airplane. I'll be stretching out. I'll do some burpees in the airport. People think I'm crazy, but whatever.
I've done full on yoga in the airport waiting. Like, what the hell? You know, I'd rather be flexible when I sit. I haven't tried a burpee, though. It's not a bad idea in the airport. I'm concerned about recovery because I have a few clients who exercise, they do marathons and whatnot on a regular basis. And a lot of them, when I look at their labs, like their cortisol is just through the roof. And it's like, it's not because of the exercise as much as it is the lack of recovery. Like if you're going to hit it hard every day, you're going to want some sleep and some proper nutrition. And if you're not getting it, I found, at least in my own life, that if I wanted to exercise that intensity, that it took so much effort to recover adequately to just maintain homeostasis that I switched to the high intensity thing. But it's interesting because you're kicking ass, obviously. And I'm always intrigued by people who just are kicking ass doing high intensity, or not even high intensity, but just long-term stuff that's also at high intensity. So I want to know how you do it, man.
What I found, and I don't know if you've studied this, is the better shape you're in, it gets progressively better. So in other words, the recovery time takes longer if you're not in great shape. My best performances are back-to-back races. So if I did a 24-hour race this weekend and then the following weekend did an Ironman, my Ironman time was better.
Wow.
Traditional theory would say you need the rest. I remember, I don't know if you know Ian Adamson. Ian Adamson, mm-hmm. Amazing athlete, Discovery Channel did this test where they had him strapped with all kinds of wires and they were studying the body. And what they found was the body actually becomes more and more efficient. You get in better shape with every passing hour of working out, and it's fight or flight. And so, yes, we all need rest. Yes, you need recovery time. But the better shape you're in, it makes it that much easier.
That makes great sense. And when you kick ass the way you do, in fact, one of the effects we know happens from long distance ultra endurance things is you can get more mitochondrial efficiency. And I know very well that better mitochondria in your cells equals more efficient sleep, for instance. So your efficiency of recovery goes up when you're in better shape. I would buy that in a minute. You've said some other things, though, that one of them was really cool. You said the phrase, "I can't," doesn't mean anything to me anymore, not because of my ego, but because I know anything is possible. So you're bringing up like the effects of ego on performance there. So how do you deal with your own ego when you're hitting your wall and when your body is saying no? Like, how do you overcome that? Like, what's the strategy?
Well, I try to use my ego to get me through, right? So what I like to do is publicly announce I'm going to do something. So it's Sunday and I don't know if I'm ready, but I want to raise some money for hospice care. So I'm saying, all right, Wednesday I'm leaving. I'm going to run 300 miles straight. I publicly commit. I send an email to everybody I know. I don't really want to run 300 miles straight. No one does, right? But I use my ego to trap myself. And so at mile 70, I'm exhausted. At mile 140, I can't take another step. But I told everybody. And my ego now is the thing that's keeping me going. And so that's how I use my ego. But as far as knowing anything's possible, it's being in those situations where you're completely done. You can't take another step. You lay down. You want to just be dead. And somehow you do another 8 days.
God, is that transcendence of the ego. The ego says no, and you're like, I'm just going to do it. And that's the point where you realize that you had limits you didn't know about.
You didn't even know. You just keep going somehow. It just keeps going until, I guess, thankfully I haven't gotten to that place where you're dead, but at some point I guess you die. I don't know.
Seems to happen to everyone that I've met, at least as far as I know. Well, do you have some kind of tech? I mean, do you use technology to keep your ego in check or to get yourself into a flow state? Like, is there any trick there, or is this just like pure on willpower?
Yeah, I'm not a technology guy at all. I don't want to know. I don't want to know what my heart rate is. I don't want to know anything. I just, less is more. One step in front of the other, small little goals. Really, really detailed paying attention to those tiny little decisions like, gee, I feel a hot spot in my foot. Let me take my shoes off. Let me adjust the situation, even if I lose 20 minutes here, because 30 miles from now, that could turn into a blister. If that turns into a blister, I'm walking funny. Walking funny turns into a hip problem, then I'm out of the race.
Yeah.
So really paying attention to those tiny little things.
Do you know the book Fixing Your Feet? Is that a familiar thing for you? No. It was one of the first really serious books about ultra endurance running and foot care. And it's funny you just mentioned that, because this guy looked at all these successful people who finished 100 mile plus races, and the number one variable he could find was gaiters to keep dirt out of their shoes. So he focused all of his work on like, how do you just keep feet from falling apart? I used a lot of those techniques when I did a lot of high altitude mountaineering, and it's kind of similar for me. I'm going to get to that rock up there, and you just one foot in front of the other. And it's one of the things I enjoy most is like, it's, you in a mountain and there's not enough air, and what's going to happen next. And the answer is, well, either you freeze to death or you get down the other side. It's one of the two, and there's not much of a choice about it. There's freedom in that.
One of the things, only because you brought up the toenails earlier and just mentioned, we mentioned feet, that I found that might be useful for your listeners is you don't even need gaiters. What you need to do is when you train, sprinkle some sand in your shoes. Don't wear socks.
you're such a masochist. All right.
Seriously,
this is awesome.
Tighten them up a little more than you would normally. Mm-hmm. Make sure you run through every puddle you can find. And get your feet used to. Listen, Michael Phelps' coach used to purposely break his goggles, completely screw up his flights, make his life miserable, because if that happens in the Olympics, he's got to be able to deal with it. And so I always made my feet deal with terrible situations during training, and it was a piece of cake in the race.
It's funny. I've had the tenderest feet forever. Blisters, I blister really, really easily, and that's been just a bane for some of the things where, I move a lot. And just walking barefoot on gravel has always been terribly uncomfortable. And, I do the mind over matter, but it just hurt like hell. And I finally started standing on spikes. I have a sleep induction mat, which is basically a bunch of really sharp plastic spikes. And I stand on that thing every day for at least 10 minutes. And, I can walk outside on gravel and everything else, but somehow rocks didn't do it, but sharp like nail things poking at the bottom of my feet. Like I'm so much happier now. And this is something I've been working on for like 10 plus years to just not have sore feet. So yeah, there's something to be said for just beat the crap out of them and let them get stronger. But I would, God, sand in my shoes. I think I would just like not like that. So man, you're a man's man from that perspective. Let's talk about flow state, right? Sometimes having physical pain puts you in a flow state. What was your first flow state experience? Like, what's it like for you?
I would say it was a race I did called the Yucatec in Canada. It was northern Quebec. It was 4 or 5 days into this thing. And everything had dropped off my shoulders. There was no more attachment to anything in the real world, in our real world here with money and headaches and business. And that all went away. And I don't know. I just became this machine. And I'm hallucinating and all that, but just doing things I didn't even know I was capable of.
So you felt a flow state there. What's it like if you go into flow state? So you're hallucinating, but I've had Stephen Kotler on to talk about studying flow states and things like that. So different athletes from different disciplines enter it in a different way. But I mean, any other details? So like you're hallucinating, you're pushing yourself really hard, and you went into this space. But tell me more about what's it like.
For me, it's this ability to go beyond anything I ever did in training or any race before, and all of a sudden, you're not running out of breath. Your heart rate doesn't matter. I was just moving, but I'm not talking about for 10 minutes. This is for 10 hours. You're just you don't need water. You don't need food. I'm seeing all kinds of crazy things, hallucinating all kinds of things. It's just an amazing place to be. Crash at some
point. You said you do crash at some point?
Oh yeah, you crash. You come down off that and then you gotta recover. But while you're in it, it's pretty awesome.
So what do you do to recover after a race? So you've been in a flow state, you push yourself really far, you hallucinated, you won, you achieved your goal, and then like you're sore, you're hurting, like what was it, pizza and beer, L-glutamine and egg yolks? Like what do you do?
You're going to, you're not going to like this one, but ice cold water.
I like that one. I do cold thermogenesis. I'll sit in ice water. It's one of those things to tell the body to shut up. I support that one. So you actually get in ice water?
Ice water. Got to find it. I mean, we live in a cold place here, and I got a cold pond that somehow stays in the 40 degree temperature range all year. And, it fixes things fast.
Okay, so you sit in ice for how long?
I might do a half hour, 40 minutes. When I've done back-to-back events, I'll do multiple ice baths. I could do 5, 8, 10 of them for 20 minutes each, just out, back in, out, back in.
Wow, that's pretty hardcore. So when you're not just recovering from a race, do you normally like every week expose yourself to cold to keep your vagal tone, or how does that work?
I like to take cold showers just to piss myself off. It just wakes you up. I like to do anything that I don't like to do. Whatever my mind says I don't feel like doing, I then force myself to do.
That's a lot of discipline, but what an amazing practice, right? I mean, Joe, that works. In my view of organization of the mind, you know, that there's this operating system that controls the meat of your body. So it's your meat operating system. It keeps the flesh alive, and it's kind of a bitch. Like, it's a fearful thing, and it's just worried about dying. And it's so worried about dying compared to what actually kills you that, like, the challenge of being a human, not just a high, you know, racing kind of thing, but whatever you're doing at work or at home, is pretty much telling that meat operating system to shut up. And when you make it uncomfortable on purpose, it's kind of like, you know, training a dog to not be afraid of a gunshot. Like, it's naturally afraid, so somehow you train it, and there's something to that just forcing yourself to do stuff you don't like just to show yourself who's boss. I greatly respect that. So you probably take it to an extreme of anyone I've interviewed on the show, but I like it. That's awesome.
Awesome for you. It sucks for me.
What do you do before you go on one of these races? So you got this kind of this hard edged bit of a, you know, masochistic edge where you're like, all right, I'm going to beat myself into submission. I'm going to do what I want to do. And, you know, I'm going to win. But like, do you pre-fuel, or are you like training yourself? Ah, screw it. It doesn't matter what I have before I race. I'm going to have to do it anyway. Like, do you pay attention there, or is that just kind of like a waste?
And this will sound silly and stupid. A couple of things. One is, subconsciously, I tend to get really tired before an event. Okay. And like nap and sleep, and just my body just must know we're going into war. And then secondly, I make the same mistake every single time. I don't need me food. I don't need anything. I'll be fine. I do it every time, and I want to kill myself, you know, for not having being prepared. I don't know why. I just do it. I must purposely do it.
Got it. So there's something in there that says, you know, I'm going to make it even harder on myself. That's kind of funny, actually.
Yeah, and I always regret doing it, but that's my routine.
So as a guy who does stuff you don't like doing, I'm so curious, the daily snapshot, so the daily life of Joe, like, what do you do to wake up and then, like, eating and sleeping? Like, what's a routine?
I get up around 5-ish. Anything before 5 is just too early. Love warm water with lemon. I like to drink it really fast and just clean things out early in the morning. Immediately check some emails for about 5-10 minutes. And then 300 burpees. I got to do my 300 burpees. Do some rope climbs. My kids start Kung Fu at 5:45. So I like to watch them.
How old are your kids?
So I have 4 children. The 3 that are doing Kung Fu in the mornings are 5, 6, and 8. And then they're done around 7. We breakfast together. They're off to school. Now, what I'm about to describe the rest of the day is not the old Joe. This is the new Joe that has to deal with Spartan Race, which is a tiger by the tail. I then go into email and phone hell from, let's call it 7:30 until 5:30, 7:30 a.m., 5:30 p.m., And then the kids do their second hour of kung fu and wrestling, and I like to do that with them. And then I do my second tranche of email and phone hell, and then I'm done. And I go to eat dinner and go to bed.
And you go to bed around what time?
I'm in bed, I would say, by the latest 10.
Okay, so 10 to 5. So you sleep about 7 hours a night.
About 7 hours.
All right, cool. Yeah. And then you say your kids are doing a couple hours of Kung Fu. You have a teacher come in, or are you teaching them, or how does that work?
So we got really lucky. We found this Chinese guy who is a master. He's probably 30 years old, and we got him living on the farm with us.
And, you are lucky, man. That's awesome.
And then we've got this other – we've got a farm here, an actual farm with goats and vegetables and stuff and greenhouses. And the kid that runs that – I say kid, he's 25. He was a wrestler. He was like the, in his weight class, 4th best wrestler in Massachusetts. So he comes in on the night session of Kung Fu and does wrestling with them as well. And the reason I'm big on the wrestling, you want to hear a great wrestling story?
Yeah.
This is unbelievable. So as my kids were developing a couple of years ago, when I got into the Kung Fu, I started telling everybody I knew about how my kids were badass and they were doing this Kung Fu. So everybody has their return stories with martial arts and MMA and so forth. And because Spartan Race has grown so much and has a partnership with many MMA affiliations and has a partnership with SOCOM, I would find out that actually American wrestling is what they look for in the MMA. Those guys are actually the toughest ones to beat. I found out that in SOCOM and in Special Forces, they want wrestlers more so than swimmers, more so than water polo players. They want wrestlers. And so I started to really get excited about this American wrestling thing, which I have no experience with. And then this hedge fund guy that I was having dinner with said to me, "Hey, Joe, I got the greatest American wrestling story ever." He said, "I grew up next to two brothers whose dad was an ex-Green Beret. Every night after dinner, the dad would put them down the basement." Now, they did the normal wrestling practice, all their normal stuff during the day. "Every night after dinner, 1 hour in the basement, blindfolded, lights out, wrestling."
Oh, my God.
It got so crazy. Got so crazy that the mother wanted to divorce the dad, the Green Beret. The neighborhood was calling social services. It got crazy, right? So fast forward, the kids get to the Olympic level, but they don't medal. One of the brothers becomes a coach at Stanford. He's teaching wrestling. At Stanford, he allows neighborhood kids to mix it up with the students, just to mix things up. One of the neighborhood kids had been coming in for about a month, and he says to the coach, who is one of the two brothers that spent 10 years in the basement blindfolded, "Coach, do you mind if I sleep on the mat tonight because I got locked out of my apartment?" Coach says, "Don't be ridiculous. Stay in my apartment." The neighborhood kid sleeps in the apartment. 2 a.m., the coach wakes up to his door opening. This guy apparently had been following around for months, the coach. Just a freak situation, has a gun, and is going to kill the coach.
Wow.
He strips him down to his underwear. He zip ties him. This is a true story. Zip ties him to a chair, hands behind his back. Feet are zip tied to the chair. He's down to his underwear, puts a pillowcase over his head and duct tapes his head, shuts the lights and has a gun and is about to kill him. Well, of all the people in the world that a perpetrator has found, he found the guy that trained for 10 years in the basement blindfolded. This guy, this wrestling coach, headbutts him and proceeds to beat the crap out of the perpetrator, pins him on the ground while tied to a chair blindfolded, calls 911 from behind his back. You got to interview him on your show.
Oh, my
calls
God. 911
from behind his back. They break down the door, the police. They come in. They can't believe what they find because he's still tied to the chair and blindfolded. And they call the dad, the Green Beret, and they said, "We got to tell you, we've been to car accidents, motorcycle accidents. We've never seen anybody beaten as bad as what your son did while tied to a chair and blindfolded." So my wife and I flew out to California to meet him. His name's Jay Jackson. He's the sweetest guy. He's unbelievable. He works with Spartan now. And so my kids do wrestling now every night with the Kung Fu because I'm not messing around.
I mean, I would love an introduction to Jay. He sounds, what yeah. an amazing story.
I'll connect you with Jay. It's unbelievable. The guy's unbelievable.
Wow. I can't imagine. I did this, in fact, something that really pushed my limits. I did the Urban Escape and Evasion course a few years ago where the final exam after like 2 days of training with bounty hunters and all, they hood you and tape the hood around you and handcuff you and kidnap you in the back of a van and you have to escape and you're like doing missions with bounty hunters looking for you. If they find you, they handcuff you even more uncomfortably and drop you further off outside of town with no wallet, no phone, no nothing. And you're like, you know, what do I do? There's more bounty hunters coming for me. And man, that, you know, you learn something about your nervous system when you do stuff like that. But here's a guy who was actually really zip tied, you know, without, you know, the ability to cry uncle. And man, he executed. Oh, so yeah, I got to talk to him.
Life and death situation yeah. with the lights out and blindfolded and zip tied to a chair.
That's like Navy SEAL, you know, SEER school kind of stuff. Wow. Incredible.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming up on the end of the show, and man, what a fascinating story. There's a question, and I'm dying to know your answer here, a question I've asked everyone who's been on the show. And what are your top three recommendations for people who want to kick more ass? It doesn't have to be any one thing you've done, any one Spartan, whatever. Just your entire wisdom, top three things.
So can I plug the book a little bit by saying it's in the book?
Hell yeah. We're going to plug the book at the end anyway with the title and the URL, and we'll put links to your book in here and all. So definitely, it's in the book.
So because I've had, you know, 30 years to think about this, and because I've been trying to do it for myself. And the book really tries to boil down what is it that makes you successful, whether it's success means finishing a 100-mile run, success means your business, success means making yourself tougher, which is probably required just to be successful. And it's one, commitment. You got to commit publicly, like I talked about before, when I trick my ego.
Yep.
And got to tell everybody you know you're doing it, whether it's wrestling in the basement blindfolded, going to the two-day urban assault school, I'm doing this, right? And so now you're on the hook. You've got to delay gratification. You know the cookie test, the marshmallow test they did in the 60s on kids.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So you can't hit the snooze button in the morning. You can't have that extra glass of wine at night. You've got to learn to delay gratification. I've been an expert at this for most of my life. And I bet you find most of the people you interview, and even the people listening, the executives, are probably really good at delaying gratification. You've got to change your frame of reference, even if you've got to trick yourself. Like, none of us have grown up in Siberia. We don't eat rocks for dinner. But you can trick yourself. In the middle of 300 burpees, which actually suck in the morning, I tell myself, well, maybe I'll do 3,000. And just by doing that, 300 becomes easier, right? When I did my first marathon, it intrigued me that I collapsed at 26.2 miles. It just blew me away that I didn't collapse at 25, I didn't collapse at 29, I collapsed at 26.2. So I realized right then in that moment that I have to continue to tell myself I'm not running 100 miles, I'm running 200 miles, even though I'm only running 100. 100 becomes easy. Just because my frame of reference.
All right, I love that.
So and then the final thing is this upside downside decision making, which I touched on a little bit regarding my feet in the middle of a marathon. Every single little decision matters. It makes you more likely to succeed. It makes you tougher if you think through the simplest, most benign decisions. For example, does it really matter if I stay in bed an extra 10 minutes? Does it really matter if I have a glass of wine at night? Does it matter if we stay up and watch TV with the kids? Yeah, it matters, because I'm going to give you an extreme example of what I mean. This is extreme. This has nothing to do with me. I'm just giving an example here. You stay up late with your wife. You watch TV till 2 in the morning. You drink a whole bottle of wine, right? Bad decision. You wake up late in the morning. Kids are screaming. You now fight with your wife in the morning because everything's screwed up. The kids missed the bus. She's late for work. You decide that afternoon you're not going home because you fought with your wife in the morning. You decide to go out with the buddies to a bar instead. You run into a 6-foot beautiful woman. Maybe you kiss her. Who knows what happens? Before you know it, you're divorced, all because you stayed up. I mean, this is an extreme example, but it shows that domino effect of how these little decisions, just like the blister or the hot spot on the foot, could, you know, here's another great one. This is a great one that your audience will probably enjoy more. An astronaut, right, the dials turn a little too much to the right, like a centimeter too much to the right. No big deal, except you end up on the wrong planet. Pretty big deal. So very important. I'm really particular about all the tiny little decisions all day long.
So you've driven a high state of awareness. You're paying attention a lot.
Yeah.
And sometimes even though your body's telling you something, you're like, screw you, body, and you just do something else anyway, just because, all right, I like that.
Yeah.
Cool. Joe, where can people learn more about your book? When exactly, or where should they go to buy it? Give me URLs, give me Twitter handles, all the stuff you'd like people to know who'd like to learn more about this. All of this will be in the show notes as well, but just read it out for people driving so they can hit it on their iPhones.
So SpartanUpTheBook.com explains everything. And the website for the races is Spartan.com, but the book is SpartanUpTheBook.com, and that'll tell you everything.
Joe, thanks a ton for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. You were awesome. You're probably the best interviewer I've ever been interviewed. I've been interviewed by a lot of people. You're good.
Joe, thanks, man. That really means a lot. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Have an awesome evening. Enjoy that cold weather in Vermont. I'm going to go outside. I'm feeling inspired to go sit in that only slightly slimy cold water lake right outside my window here. So have an awesome night.
Take care. Bye-bye.
If you haven't had a chance to check out our upgraded aging formula, it's worth a look. It's an amazing molecule you can take that helps you to mimic the effects of caloric restriction. You're probably already practicing bulletproof intermittent fasting. Adding something like upgraded aging formula helps your body to get the benefits of reducing calories without actually reducing calories. On top of that, upgraded aging formula helps your brain deal with large levels of glutamate, which is something that causes toxicity in the brain. So it helps a healthy brain stay healthy. It also has other very positive effects on maintaining healthy blood sugar levels and on other aging risk factors. This was the only supplement I've ever come across that very clearly impacts four different facets of aging. That's why I call it Upgraded Aging Formula, and it's available on upgradedself.com.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.